afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cedarstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. My co-host today is Dave Allen, as we bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. It's Monday, December 3rd, 2018. Good afternoon, Dave.
Hey there, Melody.
Hey, it's only 3 weeks till we're at Christmas.
Good Lord.
3 weeks and 2 days, but it is just unbelievable. Thanksgiving seems like it was a year ago. It's flown by so quick, but a lot of things happening in the news, and I think you're going to be picking up most of the discussion today as my voice still continues to trouble me with allergies, but we'll see how we get along. Let's go ahead and see what gold has done today. In fact, gold had a very nice day today, and we have gold right now currently up $8.50 at $1,231.60, but we were $4 higher earlier in the day. Silver was up 20 cents today at $14.45, and the high for the day was $14.65. Platinum is up 7 at 809, and palladium is up 23 at 1208. We're going to talk a little bit about palladium a little later on in the program. It really is doing some amazing things, and you know, I just don't know how, you know, to me it looks like it's such a thin market, and that's what we're going to talk about. So is it truly demand pushing it, or is it paper trading pushing it up? And if it's paper trading pushing it up, then you could see a reversal, and it could drop drastically. So I'm just not quite sure of that play. But we'll talk about that here in just a little bit. And the stock markets today. Let's see what we got here. Off their highs of the day. Heck, early morning trade, you had the Dow over 500 points. Right now we're up 288. Of course, this is often the news of the discussion between China's president and our president over the weekend. So the Dow is up 288 points, 25,826. The NASDAQ is up 110, 7,441. The S&P is up 30, 2,790. 10-year yield broke 3 at 2.99%. All European Asian markets were all giddy due to the whatever you want to call it over the weekend.
Irrational exuberance?
Yeah. Bitcoin was down another 7% today, 38.26. So let's get started. Again, lots to talk about. All your global stocks rose sharply after the president, our president, and Chinese President Xi Jinping agreed to the 90-day ceasefire in the trade war. By late morning, the Dow was up 0.8%. You know, we just, you know, heard the results of the day's trades. They met for dinner on Saturday at the G20 summit. Both of them agreed to hold off on additional tariffs. It's my understanding that the same ones that have been on are still on. It's just additional tariffs on each other's goods at the start of the new year. And of course, at the start of the new year, the tariffs on China were supposed to be they were supposed to increase from 10% to 25%, I believe, Dave.
It's true. And if after 90 days the two countries aren't able to reach an agreement, that rate of 25% would kick in, at least according to the White House. You know, trade negotiations are going to address forced technology transfer and intellectual property issues as well. You know, China has also reportedly agreed to reduce and remove tariffs on cars coming into China from the U.S. That's a big deal if it's true. Currently, that tariff is 40%. China reportedly agreed in Argentina to purchase a substantial, quote-unquote, but not yet determined amount of agriculture, energy, industrial, and other U.S. products to reduce the trade balance or imbalance between the two countries. Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin this morning said He's hopeful the two nations can turn discussions between Trump and Xi into concrete trade provisions. Now, Wall Street traders may have been exuberant earlier today over the ceasefire, but economists across the nation, Melody, are skeptical that this 90-day delay will lead to a permanent solution.
I have no doubt that they didn't do something. You know, I think they had something going on entering into the dinner. There's just, you know, it's just what we've seen how these past negotiations have been. I find it really hard to believe that China would agree to remove 40% of tariffs on their automobiles. From what I've read, a lot of them were trying, what China's real goal is to remove all tariffs, both countries. You know, so I don't know if that was part of, I'll do this if you do that type of thing. Let's eliminate all these tariffs. I know the soy, but, you know, we don't hear anything, you know, and that's what's so bothersome. There's just, okay, well, we're going to go in and we're going to talk a little bit further. But, you know, this is a start. So it is a good thing. You know, we'll have to see. We know President Trump has a huge commitment to work towards a sweeping trade deal with China in the next 3 months. And the commitments to talks throws President Trump into the most high-stakes period yet in his effort to crack down on unfair trade practices. And at the same time, as China talks play out, the president is going to push his revision of the North American Free Trade Agreement through a skeptical and divided Congress. So we'll have to see how all of this plays out with the, we certainly know that the administration wants to declare victory on trade after arguing as a candidate and in the White House, and that China's practices in Canada and Mexico did punish American workers.
Yeah, again, Mnuchin, he was part of the delegation that met with Chinese officials this weekend. There's now a couple of photographs showing the teams of both sides at an elegantly placed dining situation. He echoed the president's optimism this morning when he said, quote, "This is the first time that we have a commitment from them, China, that this will be a real agreement. I'm very hopeful we can turn this into, quote, a real agreement." And that, Melody, I believe, is the crux of this matter right now, hope. I mean, challenges certainly await, both the administration and Xi's the upcoming trade talks whenever and when and wherever they are going to take place. You know, competing interests will potentially emerge on the China negotiating team. Mnuchin said Trump himself will lead the talks, but they'll include U.S. Trade Rep Robert Lighthizer, Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross, and Trade Advisor Peter Navarro. Now, Navarro, who has called for the most forceful approach to China, you know, called Lighthizer the toughest negotiator we've ever had in the trade rep's office. Lighthizer is also known to take a tougher line overall on China. Now, later today, the Wall Street Journal reported that Trump told Xi that Lighthizer actually would run the negotiations between the two countries and not Navarro.
But it's interesting, though, because I thought Wilbur Ross was on the hatchet, you know, that he was going to be replaced, along with, you know, several others. So
that's coming soon.
So probably not before the trade agreement, maybe, unless the trade agreement with China, if whatever comes of it, isn't successful. At least there'll be someone to blame and so forth. But so what about this ending the arms race?
Well, you know, in another surprising but promising development, Trump said this morning that, you know, the U.S., China, and Russia would at some time in the future, his words, begin talks to end what he described as an uncontrollable arms race. And at the same time, he declared that U.S. defense spending was crazy. You know, the statement marks a dramatic reversal for the Prez, who has championed increased spending on the military and just in August signed a major defense spending bill. That measure authorized a top-line budget of $717 billion to cover a wide range of spending at the Pentagon. It provided the largest raise to American troops in a decade as well. You know, at the time in August, Trump said the spending bill was the most significant investment in our military and our warfighters in modern history. You know, we'll remember in March, you know, after teasing a potential veto, Trump signed a $1.3 trillion spending package that granted the most significant increase in defense and non-defense discretionary funding in 15 years.
You know, it's interesting because, you know, you see the defense. I mean, they failed their audit earlier in this year, you know, and I don't know if it was earlier this year or last year. I think it was this year, wasn't it, Dave?
Yes.
But they failed the audit. And it's just they're set to gain $61 billion more than last year. Enacted funding for a top line of $700 billion.
I hear national security. We cannot talk about it.
We cannot talk about it.
Oh no! I'm projecting the Pentagon's response to that the missing money, the failed audit.
Well, I've already heard that. So, mm-hmm. And it's already because you're absolutely correct. You're absolutely correct. But the U.S. and Russia collectively possess more than 90% of the world's nuclear weapons. In its first national security strategy, a document that outlines the administration's defense priorities, the administration said in late 2017 that China and Russia challenge American power, influence, and interests, attempting to erode American security and prosperity. But this morning, the president appeared more wary of the growing portion of America's national budget devoted to defense. I mean, there's no way China or Russia is going to cut back on their defense just because we're broke and can't continue to feed the Defense Department. And
well, you know, Russia's certainly the most broke of all three of us.
Yeah,
and probably by a long shot, but you know, China is actually, you know, building up its military on debt as well. So, you know, who knows where this ends? But you know, it doesn't bode well for the citizens of all three of the countries.
Does various types of debt matter?
What do you
mean? Like, well, you know, like we hear that China, you know, all their debt has gone into their infrastructure, you know, rebuilding, growing relationships around the world, a little more selective, where our debt is mainly just going to keep up. You know, we're going into debt just to pay our debt. We're not doing anything with infrastructure. We're not doing anything with, I mean, I've seen pictures this weekend of airports out of China and probably Dubai, and I mean these airports are incredible. We can't even clean ours properly, so it's we're, it seems, I don't know if we are, but it seems as though we're behind in modernizing tech, you know, and using technology to our benefit, because we don't, you know, our money is going to different places. So,
well, clearly, yeah, you're absolutely right, and it's how you earned your. I mean, debt is not necessarily debt. I mean, it's. I agree with, I think, where I thought you were going, that, you know, you're suggesting that, you know, $21 trillion. You know, what have we gotten for it? Well, we can look back and, you know, point to, I'm sure, a number of accomplishments, but more recently, you know, a lot of it's gone to fight decades-long wars. You know, as you said,
Wall Street.
It's gone. It's 10 years ago for the bailout of banks and other financial institutions, General Motors, and so forth. And here we are 10 years later with, you know, a need for infrastructure that's more intense than it was then. And, you know, now there's even less financial and political wherewithal for us to do this. But, you know, something's got to be done. We've got crumbling bridges and roads, you know, sewer systems and the like, airports and, you know, in particular, that, you know, the 21st century is going to make it very difficult for us to continue to compete at the top level, you know, while, you know, at home, people aren't going to be able to get from, you know, home to the grocery store because, you know, their roads are just in shambles.
So no matter how competitive we are in tax-wise and so forth, our infrastructure, if it isn't as up-to-date as some of these of our competing countries, I mean, if you were going to set up a new manufacturing plant somewhere, you know, wouldn't you want it to be where things are a little more advanced?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Sure. Sure. Well, let's turn before we hit the break to another report we're seeing today where U.S. construction spending fell for a third straight month. You know, while private sector figures showed an uptick in manufacturing order growth, but, you know, offered a mixed view on the overall factory activity in the U.S. You know, the data come as, you know, many investors are watching for signs that the Fed's three-year tightening cycle could be coming to a close after an expected hike in 2 weeks, you know, which, as we know, would be the fourth hike this year. The Commerce Department said today that total construction spending fell 0.1% to $1.31 trillion in October. You know, economists polled by Reuters had forecast outlays rising 0.4%. The figure, however, did rise 4.9% on a year-over-year basis. At the same time, private construction spending fell by 0.4% in October compared to 0.4% growth a month earlier, Melody. That's the lowest, by the way, since November of last year.
And, you know, it really doesn't, you know, the markets really didn't seem to pay much attention. And, of course, along with the death of former President George H.W. Bush, markets are going to be closed on Wednesday. Federal government's going to be closed on Wednesday. Is that as a day of warning? That is day of warning and mourning.
And is we'll it talk morning?
We'll talk a little bit more about that when we get back from the break. Please stay tuned. You're listening to Financials.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interest of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk Radio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading 1-800-375-4188 or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and I'm here with my co-host, Dave Allen. And heading into the break, we were talking about, as you all know, you probably know by now, President George Herbert Walker Bush died November 30th. He was 94, and he will be remembered at the National Cathedral Memorial Service in Washington on Wednesday. And President Trump has designated a national day of mourning. And so you will have the U.S. markets, including trading on the New York Stock Exchange and NASDAQ. They will be closed. The Dow Jones Industrial Average, the NASDAQ, the S&P will all be not working. Security Industry and Financial Markets Association has recommended that the bond markets close on Wednesday. So that means that the trading in bonds like the 10-year Treasury could see limited action on Wednesday. Let's see if there's anything else. The CME is going to shut down trading of interest rate and futures and options products for the day, though electronic trading will have a regular session. And let's see if there's the gold market will be open at this point in time. So we will also be open at this point in time until further notice. And I think that's about it, Dave. The government will be down, will be closed. The federal government will be closed. And that always brings, you know, because the people that do work get paid time and a half because it's will be looked at as a holiday. So they get extra pay. Plus those that do have off will get paid anyway. So kind of interesting. Government funding is set to expire on December 7th. That's including the Department of Homeland Security. So they're trying to get a two-week delay. I don't know if they got that yet or not, Dave.
Nope.
Trump is going to support a two-week delay of any government shutdown battle over funding for a U.S.-Mexico border wall until after Bush's funeral. So, and I think that's about it on that stage. And Discount Gold and Silver will be here, 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. A couple things happen around the world. We have violent protests in Paris, has left many wondering what this could mean for the President Macron amid a resurgence in populist politics ahead of European elections next year. Certainly the images of these riots and protests and violence over a fuel tax continue to increase, and certainly they have gripped the headlines here in this past couple of weeks. And they actually seemed to, you know, come to a head over the weekend. There was thousands of protesters that they hit the streets. What are they called? The green jackets? Yellow jackets, I
yellow,
guess.
Yellow vests, technically.
Yellow vests, yeah. So it's about the recent tax hikes on gasoline, especially diesel, as part of the government's proposed carbon tax designed to improve its environmental credentials.
Yeah, demonstrators wearing these high-visibility yellow jackets have blocked highways and fuel depots, and protests are, you know, have turned violent over the weekend. These yellow jackets, I don't know how to pronounce the French term for it. Technically, I think it translates to yellow vests, are required of licensed drivers in Paris. I'm not sure if that's the entire country or just Paris. Demonstrators, were initially described as, you know, largely working class, this being a grassroots movement with, you know, many among the demonstrators saying their livelihoods are being threatened by these higher fuel prices. You know, however, the protests have now morphed into wider discontent at the high cost of living in France and, you know, overall dissatisfaction with Macron, whose popularity, Melody, continues to fall. A poll in late October showed that 71% of the respondents in that poll had no confidence in Macron. Following several weekends of protests, tensions came to a head on Saturday when full-scale riots erupted in Paris, with scenes described as urban warfare and the worst riots in a generation. The incidents led to police deploying tear gas and water cannons against protesters. Reported 133 people were injured, including police officers, and 412 arrested.
It's really amazing, only 133 people, when you see the pictures. You know, it's hard to believe only 133 people were injured, you know. It's they deployed 37,000 police officers. France's has a branch of armed forces placed under the jurisdiction of the Interior Ministry. There was 30,000 of them and over 30,000 firefighters to deal with the riots. And he's only been in office for a year, I believe. So I can't imagine that the high cost of living in Paris has just magically appeared over the past year. And I'm not here to support Macron, but you know, things have been brewing for a very long time. And but he's going to get blamed for it. I mean, his predecessor, you know, who was before him, Hollande.
Hollande.
Well, I mean, he wasn't, he was a, you know, an elitist and so forth, and Macron practiced underneath him. So, but he has ordered the prime minister to hold talks with the leaders of the yellow vests. He said on Twitter that he will always respect the protest, I will always listen to the opposition, but I will never accept the violence. So, they're likely to stick to this new carbon tax rate. Despite all that is happening with the riots and the violence.
Yes, it is true. You know, that it does spell trouble for Macron. Whether it means he's in trouble in terms of re-election, well, we'll find out soon enough. I mean, if you know, it's a sign of things to come for his party at the European Parliament elections next May. You know, questions over his leadership at home, you know, especially with the far-right National Front Party, do remain a threat. You know, one observer over there noted the unemployment rate will remain the key indicator of Macron's popularity going forward. You know, this person added that the overall unemployment rate is still stubbornly close to 10%, and this will need to fall significantly in the coming years for Macron to reverse his decline in the polls and make him unassailable in the 2022 election cycle.
You know, I think this is kind of interesting. Qatar is to leave OPEC after 60 years. And there's people that are wondering about the future of OPEC. And Qatar just abruptly announced it would sever the ties with the oil cartel after six decades. That's a long time. But you know, the relationship between the Saudis and Qatar hasn't been on. So to some degree, Dave, this is a surprise, but on the other hand, maybe not so much.
Well, they might consider it. I mean, it's a double-edged sword for OPEC. I mean, I think some, like Saudi Arabia, might be saying, who's Qatar? You know, what are they to us? You know, a bit player, a bit remaining player in the overall, you know, organization. you know, since June of last year, OPEC's kingpin, Saudi Arabia, you know, along with three other Arab countries, has cut trade and transport ties with Qatar. You know, accused the country of supporting terrorism and, you know, its regional rival, Iran. Of course, Qatar denies the claims and says the boycott hampers its national sovereignty. You know, OPEC's final meeting of the year is, you know, now expected to be Qatar's last. You know, it's certainly not a major oil producer when compared to other OPEC members, but, you know, when looking at, you know, the small, comparatively small country, you know, its total energy output, you know, it's on course to produce more than 6 million barrels of oil per day, that by 2022. You know, some analysts say, you know, this is a major supplier of energy to the world. You know, Qatar is known as one of the largest producers in the world of liquefied natural gas. So, you know, there goes Qatar. You know, that brings it down to just Russia and Saudi Arabia. OPEC Melody is not what it used to be.
Wow. But they're still using the petrodollar. And, you know, and I guess Russia and OPEC did come, they did agree to their, to cut production and so forth. What's interesting about this is you'll hear a lot of talk about, well, who's Qatar? It's no big deal. It is a big deal when it comes to the liquefied natural gas, the LNG. I mean, they're one of the world's largest producers. So that is a big deal.
And host, I think, of the 2022 World Cup. So that's going to bring millions of people to the tiny country in the middle of summer to play soccer, in some cases outdoors, in 110 to 15 degree heat.
Maybe they'll somehow they'll air condition. I don't know. But they don't have that big of a showing after all.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, that's interesting news. Now, global growth is slowing. That's not a big surprise, you know, even though only a few months ago, the world's fortunes appeared increasingly robust. You know, for the first time since, you know, the wealth-destroying agony of the global financial crisis 10 years ago, every major economy was growing in unison. Well, so much for that. The global economy is now palpably weakening, even as most countries are still grappling with the damage from that last downturn. In fact, it's saw a statistic recently, Melody, that a full 35% of Americans still haven't recovered completely. I'm surprised the number's that low. Many nations are mired in stagnation or sliding that way. Oil prices are falling and factory orders diminishing. You know, it's reflecting, you know, the slowing demand for certain goods. This is globally now. Companies are warning of disappointing profits, sending stock markets into a, you know, this bout of selling that we saw over the last few weeks, that at least for the time being reinforced that slowdown. You know, Germany and Japan have both contracted in recent months. China's slowing more than experts anticipated. The U.S. is expected to decelerate next year as the stimulative effects of last year's $1.5 trillion tax cuts wear off, leaving behind a path of huge budget deficits and growing national debt.
Well, you know, they're blaming the turnaround from rising interest rates that's been delivered by the Fed and other central banks that are trying to unfold trade wars between the U.S. and China. The likelihood that Britain's torturous exit from the European Union is going to damage trade across the, you know, English Channel has discouraged, you know, some investments. The Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, it's a think tank that's, you know, that's run by, you know, most of the world's most advanced nations. They concluded that the global economy would expand by 3.5% next year, but that was down from 3.7% of this year. And they're probably optimistic. But yet in declaring that the global expansion has peaked, you know, the so-called brains at the OECD effectively concluded that the current situation is as good as it gets before the next pause or downturn. So this is as good as it's going to get, ladies and gentlemen.
Yes, it is, Melody. You know, we see Greece, Spain, Italy, youth unemployment rates stuck above 30%. In Britain, the typical worker hasn't seen a pay raise in more than a decade, you know, after accounting for inflation. South Africa's economy is smaller today than, you know, it was in 2010, and now the country's ensnared in a recession. You know, as one writer said, Melody, something is rotten in Denmark.
Yes. It is. You know, Israeli police say Netanyahu's should be indicted. I don't think this is anything new, but, you know, I mean, he's probably as corrupt as they come. But, you know, the Israeli police recommended that the country's attorney general indict the prime minister and his wife for alleged bribery due to the relationship with Israel's leading telecommunication tycoon. So this is a very big deal. Case 4000, as it is widely known, is a third time in the last year the police recommended that they be indicted for bribery. And Netanyahu allegedly is taking gifts worth $200,000 from businessmen in return for allegedly promoting their interest. There's also a deal between Netanyahu and the publisher of Israel's largest newspaper. The allegations in the case 4000 are the gravest of all the corruption investigations against Netanyahu. So what's keeping him out of jail from being indicted?
Oh, let us count the ways. Let us count the ways.
Yeah, his corruption.
He's covered his bases well. Yeah. You know, you got to love a country whose national police, you know, number their cases. You know, I like that there's it certainly makes it more transparent, you know, for those who are wondering, well, how many cases, you know, or that do they work on a year? Well, here's one case, 4,000. Well, actually, I think Netanyahu apparently has been involved in 3,000, 2,000, and case 4,000. Found that piece of it interesting. You know, according to the police, Netanyahu, who at the time, you know, was also serving as the telecom minister, allegedly gave this guy regulatory benefits worth hundreds of millions of dollars. So, you know, I think I'll believe it when I see it, Melody. That is an indictment. I mean, to no surprise, you know, his Netanyahu's reaction has been a total rejection of the allocation, and I'm sure it's weighing heavily on Israeli internal politics.
And we're just about out of time in this segment. I wanted to touch a little bit about palladium and, of course, the scramble for palladium supply. We're not going to be able to finish this, but we will bring it back at the next segment. It's getting pretty close to the price of gold. And palladium, which for those of you who don't know, is used in the catalyst in gasoline fuel vehicles. And we'll take it up there when we get back. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Oh, won't you tell me again? Oh, can you feel it? Oh, won't you tell me again tonight?
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. We're a little laid back today, I think, so let's get this program going. 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188.
Palladium, take us to the high.
Yeah. Make sure you visit the website, dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. We've got the 90% 50-cent pieces on sale. Give us a call. And, of course, we have some 1/10th ounce American Gold Eagles. I got some old packages still left over before today's increases of $445 for $25 face value and a 10th ounce American Gold Eagle. If you purchase two or more, package drops to $435. They are limited because
they're
of the
nuts.
Yeah, I know.
You're in non-profit mode again, aren't you? Well, it is the holidays.
We always make profit, just not as much, But so give us a call, ladies and gentlemen, 800-375-4188, and that does include all your shipping costs also. So it is a deal. We were talking about palladium. How it's surging, what it's used for. It climbed to a record for a fourth time in November. And investors continue to pull the commodity from exchange-traded funds, taking holdings to the smallest in almost a decade. The cost to borrow the raw material for a month climbed to more than triple the yield on 10-year treasuries. So this is a very tight market. So there's not enough supply for the number of buyers right now. He says, as tight as it is, it takes very little movement in this market. It takes very little to move this market. And again, that's when you get these paper tradings in there, Dave, and you don't know if it's really coming from, you know, supply and demand or because it's the thin volume. It takes very little to move the market, so you get a lot of paper traders going in there.
Yeah, we'll keep our nose to the grind on this one, Melody. You know, palladium for immediate delivery climbed as much as 1.8% on Friday to a record 1,205 an ounce before closing at 1181. Today it was up 30 at 1:30 p.m. At 1211. Spot gold, meanwhile, closed at 1221 on Friday and was up about $13 at 1234 at 1:30 today. That means an ounce of gold, buys as little as 1.018 ounces of palladium. That's the least since 2002. So, you know, quite a deal there. Although, as Melody suggested, and we'll look into this for anyone who's interested, you know, where this goes in the next few trading sessions and week. Remains to be seen. I mean, hedge funds and other large speculators reportedly boosted their bullish position in palladium for a fourth straight week, over 13,800 futures and options, according to the Commodity Futures Trading Commission, and that was the most since March. So stay tuned. We'll be reporting on this more if you're interested in buying. In the meantime, don't hesitate to call us at 1-800-375-4188. Melody.
Palladium is a great little way to diversify your gold and silver holdings. Again, I don't know where it's going. You know, we've seen, again, rhodium go from 400 to 10,000. Are we seeing the same thing today? I don't know. So, you know, it's I think it's at least at a level that if you buy and it does go down, you won't lose that much. So it's, again, to speculate would be okay for you to do so. We're going to talk a little bit about our newsletter, the Financial American Survival Newsletter. It's going to be published after today's program. And, of course, if you want to subscribe to the newsletter, go to dgscoins.com. And, Dave, you write in today's edition about what a dismal year it's been for investors in virtually every class of asset. Tell us more.
Well, Melody, last Friday's blog, we call it What a Rush of Gold and Silver, listed a baker's dozen of events of just the previous 5 days, that is last week, that were moving the needle of economic uncertainty and geopolitical volatility closer and closer to the red zone. You know, you could have easily added a zero to that list of 13 and still have been caught short of events driving the forces across the globe. You know, it's further evidence of a world in turmoil. In last week's Zero Hedge newsletter, Tyler Durden quoted Thomas Pulowak of T. Rowe Price, who said, referring to global investors and traders, "You know, it's been a pretty miserable year. 2019 isn't looking to be any better either."
Except for gold and silver.
There you go.
So it is fairly easy to agree with the first part of that statement. And, you know, and it's just as simple to take strong issues with the second. What do you think, Dave?
Well, you know, there's no doubt that 2018 hasn't been a banner year for investors, no matter the asset classes that are near and dear to your heart and savings or retirement account. Durden, for example, points to a Deutsche Bank analysis showing that as of the end of October this year, 89% of most major global assets had a negative total return year to date in U.S. dollars. That rose to over 90% last week before some of the stock market rebound. Now, that's the highest portion, only going all the way back to 1901, surpassing the 84% hit in 1920. You know, what a year, what a difference a year makes, too. I mean, in 2017, just 1% of asset classes delivered negative returns. So, you know, the final straw for this year was when the S&P 500, which had valiantly resisted moving below zero for the year, finally succumbed to the gravitational pull of most other markets last week. Those, in the words of Durden, suffering its second correction of 2018.
Wall Street Journal also recently reported that the stocks, bonds are staging a rare simultaneous retreat, putting global markets on track for one of their worst years on record.
Well, for sure, not to mention Main Street. I mean, it's been a long, painful time for paper marketeers since the S&P hit its all-time high on September 20th. Today, notwithstanding, you know, major stock benchmarks in the U.S., Europe, China, and South Korea have all slid 10% or more from their recent highs. Crude oil, as you know, we've reported, has lost a third of its value and is now knee-deep in bear market territory despite its rise today. Emerging market currencies have broadly fallen against the U.S. dollar, and Bitcoin, as Melody has been pointing out, crashed to I forget if it was around 35 or 3,800. I think it hit 3,500 before slightly rebounding, still down 8%. While normal safe havens, you know, like treasuries and gold and silver rallied this fall as riskier assets took a nosedive, they're still down on a price basis for the year. But 2019 is coming. That trend, by the way, the fall, especially regarding treasuries, reflects investor concerns about, you know, faltering economic growth coupled with rising interest rates and other uncertainty.
You go on to observe that as a result of the market's sharp and broad pullback, you have fund managers that are they're trying to find places to park their money. sooner or later they're going to remember gold and silver.
sooner or later. I mean, indeed, you just gotta believe it. I mean, many investors still refuse to accept the growing reality that the bull market for paper is over. Morgan Stanley just the other week sounded the alarm. That's, you know, a big Wall Street, pro-Wall Street financial institution, you know, said we are in a bear market, plain and simple. But Melody, never say die seems to be the mantra of, you know, most Wall Street traders. You know, for those unwilling to throw in the towel, betting the bull market in U.S. stocks still has longer to run before the inevitable downturn apparently keeps them sleeping at night, you know, if not their clients. Now, Durden believes that, you know, whether this cautious optimism is justified depends on just one person. Who could that be?
Santa Claus?
There you go. Santa Claus, a.k.a. Fed Chair Jerome Powell, who last week said that the Fed is closer to its neutral rate than previous thought, possibly suggesting a less hawkish pursuit of higher rates, presumably in the new year. If not, and there are still few signs the Fed's going to concede and appear to give in to pressure from a president who's been criticizing the Fed recently for its steady tightening, what has been a dreary 2018 may indeed mutate into a disastrous 2019 for stocks and bonds.
You know, and for gold and silver, you know, there will be another Fed-induced crisis. And it very well could be 2019. And again, it could be the gold rush that we've been talking about and that we've been waiting for since the last one. Yeah. Things haven't changed. The fundamentals, you know, they can bring us out of these recessions. They can put us into these recessions. But the bottom line, ladies and gentlemen, your purchasing power is disappearing every single day. And people just can't grasp the idea that the purchasing power is becoming weaker and weaker. And it's like, Dave, they need to have some sort of a big event. It's like, why would you want to wait until the big event? Why wouldn't you want to, you know, prepare for what's coming, regardless of when it happens? Look at all the dates, people. Oh, we're going to have an October surprise. Well, here we are, December. Did that October surprise occur? You know, I mean, how many dates? And then what happens? Oh, well, I've heard that before, so I'm not going to do anything. And that's absolutely the wrong thing that you can decide to do. Nothing.
Yeah, it's almost like the very loyal churchgoer deciding to wait to ask for forgiveness of your sins until the big asteroid hits and destroys our planet. A little too late, ladies and gentlemen.
So
hesitate.
Yeah, so, you know, again, and I saw today where Powell said, well, you know, I didn't say anything about cutting back on rates next year. So, you know,
must have gotten some phone calls after his comment last week.
Maybe. But what about heading into the home stretch of 2018?
Well, Melody, you know, as we head into the end of the year, it's certainly, and we've just been saying this, it's certainly critical more than ever to pay attention to all the news that shapes our nation and the world, and the way that ever-unfolding events continue to rock global financial markets. You know, several key events take place over the coming week and the next few weeks that are going to set the table for the new year, and that we believe will almost certainly result in that long-overdue surging of gold and silver prices. I mean, the deadline for funding an important chunk of the U.S. government for the rest of fiscal year 2019, this week, Thursday, 11:59 p.m., Now, as Melody had indicated, you know, there could be a deal afoot between the White House and congressional leaders to do a short-term funding bill and revisit this after the remembrance of Bush 41 on Wednesday. But, you know, the Fed's Open Market Committee also meets December 18 and 19 to decide whether to continue its rate hiking folly. You know, as most street listeners know, every single Fed tightening, and we've told you this a number of times, like the one we're in the midst of, has resulted in a recession or other financial crisis. And ahead of the FOMC meeting, the government's latest measures of unemployment and inflation, as understated as they inevitably will be released on December 7th this week and 12th, respectively.
And if he asks for a two-week delay, that means he's waiting for the FOMC to meet. You know, notice that that would be after all of these key reports.
Be a smart move.
You know, so.
Smart move.
Do you think that's a smart move?
Well, only to the extent I think a December rate hike is a done deal. And I think it just gives more fodder for his ammunition. Not sure it does anything good in the long term, but, you know, in terms of the narrative that our president is, you know, trying to lay out to the American people, you know, I think it plays into his hand.
And then beyond the rest of the year, we look for the additional political instability, and that's for when the 116th Congress is going to be seated on January 3rd. So you would think that he'd really want to get the spending bill done before January 3rd.
Well, if he wants anything to look his way, you know, there's going to have to be some grand bargain other than the wall, I believe. Of course, that's the bargain he's looking for. So I don't know. I think, you know, if you have additional investigations by these, newly seated Democratic congressional House committees, you know, it's going to make it a lot more difficult for the two congressional chambers and the White House to gain consensus on any issues, much less the most, you know, vital, our budget and out of sight debt.
Yeah. Hey, what a great ending to the program, Dave. Thank you very much. I'll be back tomorrow with Butch Paul. Until then, be safe. Good night.
Bye.
Penny left
for me. That's too bad.